Hey everyone, welcome back to The Weird Years. This is the podcast where we're pulling apart the big existential meltdown inducing questions that happen in your 30s. And today's episode is weirdly personal, so it's just me riffing on some things I've been thinking about. We have no guest, and this is a topic that you guys voted for, and it's all about identity shifts. I've been thinking recently how I'm probably about to go through a giant identity shift. Lots of people give you the warning about it, but that when you have a child, which I will be having in January, there's going to be a massive identity shift. And it got me thinking about all of the other identity shifts and changes and tweaks and versions of myself that I've had over the very many years. And when I shared this topic on Instagram, it was something that you guys related to. So I want to get really into that and talk about identity and why it changes and why it can feel so like destabilizing, but also how to, I guess, come to terms with our identities shifting, because it is going to be such a massive part of our weird years. And also maybe how to think about like rebuilding or changing or evolving our self-concept. So we're going to get into all of that. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. This idea of identity and like having an identity comes up in literally every part of your life. It comes up when we're talking about relationships, when it comes up with careers, it comes up with even like moving out of the city can shift your identity, right? Because you think of yourself as a London person or you think of yourself as a city person, and then you have to change that view of yourself. And I think when I think about identity, and there's a million different psychological concepts of how people view the self and self-perception models and stuff like this. But to really simplify it down, we can think about identity as two different things. So first of all is the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves. And this is how we try to make sense of our like role in the world. It's how we think about who we are and why our life matters. So it's things like, you know, I am a sporty person, or I am someone who loves the countryside. It's those kind of statements of things I believe about myself. I am someone who's outgoing. I am someone who's ambitious. It's those kind of self narratives make up, let's say, half of how we think about our identity. And then I think the other part of identity is our behaviours. So the things that we do also shape our identity, right? So it provides evidence, I guess, and reinforcement. And this is the thing that can really shift and change throughout these years. And it can be aligned or not aligned, and we'll get into all of that. But the behaviours that you do also form a massive part of your identity, right? Like if you quit your job or you start a project, that behaviour impacts what your identity is. And I want to start this conversation of identity with the acknowledgement, or maybe a realisation that I had, that I think often society gives us this narrative of that your identity is something that's like fixed. It's something that you can have a finished self, and that like you explore your identity, but then once you've got it, that's it. And it's kind of in your box and that's who you are. And I think, firstly, I don't think this is true at all. And we'll go into some of the research on that. But I also think it's really at the detriment to ourselves, because you know, all of this language around doing the work and self-exploration, all that stuff is amazing. But the idea that you might come out the end of that with this really secure, solid sense of self and identity, which never ever changes, to me is just selling yourself short. Like, not only is it impossible, it will not happen. You're bound to let yourself down if you go into it with that mentality. But also, I think it holds us back, right? If we think about our identity from the view of the stories that we tell ourselves and the behaviours that we take, and that forms up a big part of our identity, then are we holding ourselves back from experiencing new things or changing if we buy into this social narrative of having like one finished self, like this is myself? Maybe you're already listening to this and nodding and being like, yeah, that makes sense. Or maybe you're like, no, actually, I think a really secure, like firm sense of self that doesn't change is important. And I can see where you're coming from, but I think just play with the idea that, let's say your behaviours and the stories you tell yourself are so fixed, then the idea is that, I don't know, in your late 20s, your 30s, that you're supposed to have the optimum of those. when you're going to live, hopefully, another 30, 40, 50 years, that is a unbelievable pressure to put on yourself. What if we were saying that actually those things have to change, that there's no such thing as a finished self, that we are always evolving? I think it gives us a lot more freedom and a lot more freedom to experience new things and to be open to changing. So I'm going to use myself as an example here. Like, I've always thought of myself as a very rational, science-based, I guess, logical person. I've always been like, I'm not super into like woo-woo things. That's not me. It's not part of my identity. All those other things I just mentioned are my identity, like science and rationality, and I need evidence for things. And I think I was always pushing away from anything that felt very spiritual or like too woo-woo. And in the last year, I've kind of lent into some of that stuff through coaching and through like some interesting events that I've been to in London. And I had such a realization of like, oh, my identity and my self-concept was holding me back from like these new experiences. And that actually now I've started to play more with things like meditation and manifestation, things that my previous identity would never have, you know, entertained at all. And actually now that I have, I'm opened up to all these new ways of seeing the world, and it changes my scripts and the stories I tell myself, because now, yeah, I do class myself as someone who's maybe a little bit more spiritual, not in like a religious sense as such, but more of a, I guess, connection to the universe, or however we want to see. Even the way, even I can hear it in my voice that when I say this, I'm like, I don't yet fully believe it. I'm building it into my self identity at the moment, I think. But it's also changed my behaviours. Like, I do now meditate at least 3 times a week. So just an example of, by accepting that you don't have this one finished version of yourself, will open you up to new stories you can tell yourself and new behaviours. And ultimately, in time, that will just further kind of push yourself into getting closer to this idea of like a version of you that works for this stage of your life. I also would say that one of the frustrations I've felt in the last few years, I think it's amplified by the political and the kind of cultural stuff that's going on in our world right now, but I think the human experience is so rooted in the ability to be able to take on new information and change narratives for yourself and change behaviours for yourself. Like, is that not actually a fundamental principle of moving through the world? That if you learn something which changes the framing of something you thought you knew, or the context of something that you thought you knew, is it not our obligation to take that in and learn from it and change from it, change the way we talk to ourselves, change our behaviours? So having a more kind of flexible view of our identity, I think ultimately opens us up for, you know, an absorption of what it means to be human. And there's actually some really interesting research around this in psychology. It's from the field of psychological flexibility research, and it's all about exploring how people's self-identity and the self-concepts change over time and change with new information and change with experiences and moving through the world. And they found that people who can update their self-concept regularly report higher well-being. So people who can say, yes, this is my identity, but it's flexible and it evolves, they report higher states of well-being, better well-being. So if you think about those people who become very set in their ways, it's not like, it's not usually associated with positive attributes, right? If you're someone who tends to happen when we're a little bit older, maybe we absorb things a little bit less, or we're a little bit less willing to change. But that idea of being someone who's very set in their ways, whose identity does not shift, it usually doesn't have the best outcome, does it? And that is actually also reported in the psychology research. So I just thought that was really interesting. So I just wanted to get all of this up front and really just root us in this idea of, there is so much pressure to be a rounded person who knows exactly who they are and how they move through the world and have it all figured out, as they like to say. And I just want to give us all maybe a little collective breath of like, ah, okay, firstly, we don't have to do that. Secondly, if we did do that, actually, we would be, from the research, less psychologically happy. It would affect our well-being in a negative way. and that actually we'd be missing out on so many of the amazing facets of being human, of learning, of changing, taking on new experiences. So if you have been feeling this way, maybe let's just go into this conversation with the idea that this linear narrative of becoming a fixed version of yourself is not the best route anyway. So it's a pressure we do not need. Human identity is fluid, and that is a great part of it. And this episode is about identity shifts. And as always, it's rooted in our weird years. So I was reading into and really thinking about and journaling on like why identity shifts hit so hard in our 30s and why they feel so unbelievably intense. And I think there's points in our lives when our identity will feel more stable than others. And that's also normal. Like you might go through a number of years where you do feel really fixed in yourself and you feel very grounded and you think you know the narratives that make up your identity and you know the behaviours that make up with your identity, and that works for you. But there will be other points in your life where, because of internal circumstances or external circumstances, you're thrown into much more shifts. And when I was thinking back to like my 20s versus my 30s, I think your 20s are actually all about kind of trialing, and it's identity building years. Like the whole of your 20s and into a lot of your 30s is these identity building years. It's like you're completely learning, you're trialing, we're exploring who we are, and we're also gripping quite tightly to the versions of identity that we have, right? If you think back to being 23 or 25, you probably felt like you knew who you were to a degree, or at least you had versions of an identity that made a lot of sense for you. This might be that you are a student of psychology, like I was. I was a Reading University student, that was part of my identity. Or you have a piece of identity which is like you are a sibling, you have like you're a part of a family unit. There might just be these parts of identity which are very tight and they feel very firm and easy to kind of put on as part of your cloak. That's a weird word to use. Part of your cloak of identity. Let's go for that. And for me personally, those identities were quite clear. And I definitely went through a few of them in my 20s. Definitely like I was the party girl for quite a while. That was a part of my identity. That like I really enjoyed partying. I liked going out. I was the social person. I would have made my identity very much rooted in that, in this idea that I'm the person that like on a Thursday or Friday night and a Saturday night, probably you can text me and I will be up for doing something and I probably will go out and I probably will have fun plans. And that was a part of my identity. Or then moving into my biggest, I guess, identity thing that I hung up on was around my career, like being a startup girl in quotations. Like I was a startup person. That's what I did for many years. I really built that into my identity, and those versions of me, they gave me roots and they helped me like know where I belonged in this very confusing and ever-changing world and having come to London. So you're trying on like different hats in your 20s, right? And you're exploring, but you also maybe hold on to things a little bit tighter than you do in your 30s. Maybe that rings true to you, maybe it doesn't. I would actually love to hear what you think. Feel free to, you know, drop comments, leave me messages. Feel free to leave rambling voice notes in my DMs, which I absolutely love, to be honest, if that's something that you feel like you relate to. And you might be listening to this and being like, wait, but what, didn't we say that identity is ever evolving and like maybe these really fixed views of identities don't serve us? And yes, completely. And I think somewhere personally in my 20s, and I think you will definitely relate to this, is that parts of those identities somewhere along the way, I started realizing that those identities weren't always like the most honest or the most beneficial, or even like they were sometimes like performance. They were sometimes like the ambition that I held to do with my career was actually about validation, or like, you know, going out every single weekend was not necessarily like because my identity was about being a party person. That's what I loved. It was also about like busyness and the idea of busyness and friendships, using that as a, I guess, a tool to feel self-worth. So sometimes the identity that you've clung on to is trying to fill like a challenge that you have or solve something for you. And you might find along the way that, yeah, this identity, they either start to rub up against you and not make sense anymore, or they just start to naturally drift away. Like you move on to other things and that's where your interest goes and it starts to evolve. I think for me, the biggest driver of changing my identity in my 20s has been, honestly, like confidence. Like the difference from my 20s to my 30s is confidence. And that is not born out of achievement in any way. It's actually really been born out of exploration and questioning things and doing the work, in quotation. But I don't think about it as doing the work, because I would love to say that like therapy is what really built my confidence and helped me explore myself. I've done quite a fair amount of therapy, but I wouldn't say for me personally that was the biggest driver. I think for me personally it was really a slow process of like living and messing up and reflecting and realizing that the way I'd built these identities onto myself just didn't, you know, it didn't serve me anymore. Like that version, for example, that I'd built of myself as the career girl, when I left my startups and I wasn't like the startup career girl, the ambitious girl, in the way I built it onto my identity, I had like a full breakdown. Like it was more that approval wasn't there, and then I had to like rethink about it. So it's always been this kind of tearing apart of identities through the new narratives, the new behaviors, the new experiences. One thing that I also have to shout out is something that helped me explore my identity and the way I see the world and like who I am was this book by Africa Brooks, which is called The Third Perspective. I think it has a longer name than that. It's called The Third Perspective, such and such. I'm looking around my room to see if it's on any of the bookshelves near me, but it's not. And it's all about how to really define down like what you believe at this point in time so that you're able to communicate it to other people. It's very much rooted in like her frustration or her work that she does around helping people have like political debates or social debates and really coming from a place of authenticity. It's quite a chunky book. I thought it was going to be more like her journey and experience and it was going to be super, super interesting in that way. What it actually is like a massive workbook. I did it last summer in my summer of weirdness and misery. And it was so much work, like loads of reflective questions about values and points of view and identity. And that for me was like one of the biggest ways that I built confidence in who I actually was, but also just really explored like this concept of identity. The other thing I would always shout out is coaching. I think coaching, all different forms of it, whether you're doing it with an online coach or whether you're doing it in person, whether you're literally doing it through watching YouTube videos, all of those things can really help you explore. And when I look at this kind of version of myself or versions of myself in my 20s and that identity, which felt so fixed at the time, like I honestly thought, I was like, yeah, I'm a career girl, like I'm one of these people, tech CEO to the top, don't know if I want kids, most important thing is like climbing the ladder or like building my own thing, becoming like the big name. If you told me that within 10 years I would have done a 180 on that and have completely different ambitions and completely different wants, I would have been absolutely shocked. And I think that's where the psychology comes in, which is super interesting. So there's this guy called Carl Rogers, and he's one of the founding figures in humanistic psychology. And he talks about these two versions of self. And it hints back to what I was saying about, you know, versions of your identity, which is about your values and what you really care about and who you are, and versions of your identity that might be driven by like insecurities or challenges that you have. But anyway, Carl Rogers, his concept is about that there's two versions of the self. There's one which is like the real self, or what we might call the core self. And then there's the ideal self, or it's often referred to as like the shell self in coaching. And actually Lauren, my coach, she talked about this in our episode, I think. God, I should know the exact name of it. I think it was called Losing Your Path, Finding Your Purpose, I'm pretty sure, with Lauren Palmer, amazing coach. But she uses this concept quite a lot. And the concept is that there's a core self, and this is the part of you that existed before the world told you who to be. it's like spontaneous and it's curious and it's grounded and it's very driven in like your values and who you are. It's the core of that. It's where your authenticity lives. It's where like your intuition lives. It's like the gut of yourself. So think about your core identity. And when you trust your instincts, when you're operating from your core, it's like this sense of identity that feels very stable, even as things around you start to change. And then there's the shell self, which they talk about as being this adaptive version you built to meet expectations, to fit in or to stay safe. So it's not necessarily bad. The shell self can be functional. It might be that you flex this shell of yourself because you need it to kind of fit into your work or your school or whatever. But over time, if you're only operating from the shell self, which is not values driven, it's not intrinsic, it's not your gut, then you start to feel like disconnected or restless. And I think that's so interesting, almost like this feeling that you're performing your own life rather than living it. And when you're thinking about identity in the weird years, like that for me rang so true. This idea that sometimes you can slip into losing your core self and living from this shell self, and actually the things you're doing are because it's the things you think you should be doing, or it's the things that society tell you you should be doing, right? And there's so much fucking pressure on that. And if we think about these two versions of the self, the core self and the shell self, if those things are like aligned, that if the stories that you tell yourself and the behaviors that you tell yourself are really driven, they are like in line with your gut, in line with your intuition, that's when you find congruence and you find peace. Versus if you are feeling like detached from those, like there's a clash between what you, your desires really are, what your gut and your intrinsic point of view is, and the behaviors that you're living out, on the narratives that you're also telling yourself. If those things are not in line and you're living from your shell self, that's when they're clashing, right? And you start to wobble. And that's the identity crisis, or at least the identity dissonance, the identity disconnect that so many of us might be feeling. And that's difficult, right? Like to be living a life where you're not operating from a sense of identity is a really difficult place to be. And psychologically, there's a lot of reasons why this clash of what maybe we feel to be true and feel to be who we are, and the versions that we're having to perform and these shell identities that we have to live out, there's a reason why they really seem to peak and come to a head right now. And that's because our 30s are just such a huge time of change, right? In like how we see ourselves and how we relate to others and how we act out these stories and behaviors. It feels often like there's so many guidelines and like restrictions around us in this age. Like we are getting closer to, you know, more defined versions of what society says we should be doing at this age, right? There's a lot of pressure. And so it is completely normal to be feeling these identity shifts and feeling like they are tenfold at this time of life. And that's not to say they're always like negative or stress inducing. It can be a really positive thing that you feel like I'm evolving, I'm growing. It can also be that energy. Like I've massively felt that in the last few years. So it's not always a bad thing, but it's like that is why we're seeing so much shift, because we are going into a stage of life where there's way more expectations when we're starting to narrow down like who we might be in this stage. And there's some really interesting data as well around how our motivations change between our 20s and our 30s. I'm going to read a little bit of this, but there's this thing called the Stanford Lifespan Development Study, which tracks, so this is Stanford University in the US, and it tracks how people's goals and values change across decades. And the findings are really fascinating. Of what drives us in our 20s tends to be about achievement, novelty, and ambition. Like in our 20s, that's what we're driven by: achievement, novelty, ambition. And that actually in our 30s, people report that these shift. So they shift towards emotional meaning, relationships, and stability. It is a natural progression in this stage to go through that whirling of change and ripping apart your identity. And also that as time passes in our lives and we perceive time as more limited, both in terms of, you know, how long we've got left to live, but also in terms of how much actual time we have day to day, we start to prioritize depth over breadth. So that's another key theme that they see in the research, is we start to prioritize depth over breadth. So often fewer friends, more purpose-driven, we have less FOMO, and we are kind of creating a version of ourselves which is more rooted in the core. That's how I kind of took that research, that through our 30s, for whatever reason, the ambition and the motivation changes, and that actually it's a prime time to kind of revert back to your core. And maybe we're reverting back to our core through necessity, right? This is also a time in our lives where there's so many big decisions that really impact our identity. And it does get into, you know, a kind of gender divide in this as well. Like, women tend to be perceived, and our identities tend to be perceived in our role in relation to other people. So it might be when we're younger, like how attractive we are, like are we the hot person, are we desirable, might be a massive part of identity that's put onto us. Or then it shifts into being a partner, you know, that becomes a part of an identity. If you get married, if you want to do that, like being a wife often becomes part of our identity. And if you become a mother becomes a big part of our identity, a grandmother. When we talk about women, and not to go to a dark place, but this is true, like when we talk about women, those are the facets that we often talk about. And the dark place, the example that popped into my head, is when you hear like a woman has been murdered, often they will say like, she was a beautiful young girl, or she was a mother of four, she was a wife and a mother. Like, they often use this language of identity in relation to where she sits in relation to society and other people, if that makes sense. Whereas if a man gets murdered, it's often like, he was an engineer, he was a plumber. Like, they define him less in relation to his role to someone else, and more in relation to his career, or, you know, the lifestyle that he leads. That is anecdotal, but I also think there is research on it. I didn't look at it for this episode, but I'm pretty sure that if you look at like journalistic research, that would be a true thing. And I think that women are, that is often how we're perceived, is, you know, so much of how society values us is in terms of how we relate to men, whether you are heterosexual or not, heteronormative or not in your gender, like, that is, I think, the reality that we live in. Feminist literature has often pointed this out to us, right? That women, we're seen as our identity in relation to what we provide to others. For men, they're almost like, I guess, accepted, or their identity is more built up from just what they want to do, how they live their life. So the reason that I pulled that out, and actually I went on a bit of a detour from that, but I think the reason I pulled that out after that, before that little detour, was because when we're talking about, okay, the research from the Stanford study, so it shows that in our 30s, we're much more driven by emotional meaning, friendships and stability. I think it's because we are forced to make really big decisions on those things of our identity, how we relate to others. Do we want to have children? Do we want to get married? Do we want to be the career woman? We are forced to evaluate in a way that I don't think men are. So when these roles change, going from being, I don't know, the young hot person or the young sporty girl into being perhaps the wife or being the career woman or being the auntie or being the mother, when those roles change, or we opt out of those roles, we choose, we don't want to be the mother, we don't want to be the wife, we're opting out of those narratives, we, I think, feel much bigger disruptions to our identity, because so much of what society tells us about our identity is in relation to others. And why this fucks so much with our view of identity is because ultimately when your life shifts, coming back to identity in those two parts, when your life shifts, the stories that we tell ourselves of who I am and the behaviours that we have to act out or choose to act out shift massively as well. Like, how could I, for example, going into becoming a mother, if all my narratives were around like, I'm the career girl, I will do anything to get to the top, and then suddenly I have a child and, you know, those narratives aren't necessarily going to make sense for what the world expects of me or what I expect of myself. I have to go back and rethink about those narratives, right? And the same with my behaviour. If a massive part of my identity comes from the behaviour of every single day, like, I am a person who every single day I wake up and meditate, yeah, well, good fucking luck with a newborn, you know? So you're often being pushed to reevaluate and go back to your stories, go back to your behaviours. Ultimately, when life shifts, your stories need rewriting. And humans hate story gaps. That's something that, oh my God, it's such a truth, is that people have to explain things to themselves, to others. We don't like not knowing why something does or doesn't happen. We need a narrative. We need a story. That's literally how our societies work. It's on shared storylines. It's why political unrest happens so much when people are not aligned on the same stories, right? We hate story gaps. So this disorientation that we feel in these big transitions, this disorientation that you feel is not necessarily confusion. It could be a narrative tension that you need to go back and update that version of yourself so that you don't feel like your core is very different to your shell. So you're not being pushed into living from your shell. You need to work out what is that new story for yourself, which makes it all align and makes things feel right. And this is where shedding comes in. And this idea of shedding is also something I learned a lot through my coach, but also just from literature and films. I think that your 30s really become the shedding years, a time of unpicking and rethinking and releasing these identities that no longer fit. So as I've talked about, the party girl, the career girl, like it doesn't fit anymore with this version of who I am now. And shedding is the next stage of exploring. So you have this version of your identity, you're going in and exploring it, you're asking questions, you're doing that in any way that makes sense for you. Reading, maybe it's that book I mentioned, maybe it's therapy, maybe it is coaching, but then you have to start shedding because you can't hold on to every single part of your identity that you've ever had. Like it's good to have it evolving, right? It's what we said at the beginning, that the research shows that if you're able to frequently update your view of self and your identity, that you will have better psychological well-being. Clinging on to this version of you that you had before doesn't always make sense. You have to shed and let it go and wash it away. And that process of shedding and letting go of old versions of ourselves, that can really feel like a loss and a kind of quiet, private form of grief. For example, if you've been in a relationship, let's say for 7, 8 years, whatever, however long you've been in a relationship, if it was a big part of your identity and a big part of how you thought about the future, a big part of the narratives that you told yourself, and a big part of your behavior, changing that, of course, is going to feel like grief because those identities are how we made sense in the world. And they also helped keep us safe, right? They were strategies for belonging. They were strategies for how we should interact with other people. Like, it can be so painful letting go of identities. And if you are feeling a grief from a changing version of yourself, like, just don't beat yourself up so much because, as I said, they represent safety. They helped us navigate life. They symbolized certainty. Like, going back to that, humans like to have a really strong narrative. Like, certainty of an identity is really comforting. It's nice to know who you are than not know who you aren't, if that makes sense. Know who you are rather than not know who you aren't. Something in that line. So you get what I mean. Like, it's nice to know a version of yourself than to be in the flux, which is the growth and the redefining and the shedding. And they also hold like memories of belonging, right? Like when I was in the startup or when I was the party girl, these old identities are tied to often specific people, communities, or a time of your life that felt really good. And even though you know you need to shed and change and kind of create a new version of yourself, it is tied to memories. So that can also be really difficult. It's like when your identity changes, sometimes those old relationships change as well. And that's part of the journey. And we just have to keep in mind that in the long run, this evolution of self will be better for us and we will feel better at the end of it. So I want us to just think about how this shedding, it isn't a breakdown. It's not like, fuck everything I thought I was and who I was, everything's gone now and it's changed. It's actually like a clearing. It's a natural part of our journey, which we will move through and we will have the more secure times and the less secure times in our view of identity. And that ultimately it is the journey of life and evolution. And it makes space for something truer to come out, right? If we're shedding these versions of ourselves, these shell identity parts, and we're getting closer to our core, it is creating room for a new evolution. So I've been going on for a while, and in my head, this has made a lot of linear sense. I really hope that it has for you too. I hope you followed along and you're not just like, girl, you are waffling. Again, let me know if it didn't work for you. Tell me. But I want to wrap this up on some things that I've found that are really helpful, which have come a lot from the research, but also from, I am chronically online. I'm on YouTube a lot. I'm reading articles. I'm reading books as well. But some things around identity that I think are really interesting ways to like move forward and to feel more comfortable with these identity shifts in the weird years. How to make peace with evolution, I guess, and to evolve identity in a way that's healthy and that feels less dramatic and traumatizing, to be honest. Dramatic and traumatizing, I'm sure I should get fucking printed on a t-shirt at this point. Okay, so the first one is to name the versions of yourself which have come before. I was so bad at reconciling, and I think I've talked about this on the pod before, I don't know if I have, but reconciling the versions of myself from my 20s and the versions of myself from now, like they feel like completely different people. Like there was definitely a lot more hedonism, and actually it relates back to that research of your 20s being driven by like excitement and novelty and new experiences. There was a lot more hedonism in my 20s. I didn't care like loads about my health. Like I went to the gym and stuff, but I smoked. I dabbled with all sorts of party recreationals. I definitely did things that my 30-year-old self wouldn't have done. And I've always had this weird kind of relationship with the girl from my 20s because she almost like doesn't feel like me. Like I feel so far away from that person that even if I meet people from that period of time, I see them again after many years, it almost like made me anxious. It was like there was no reconciling of that person who I was and the person who I am now. Even that language, right? The person who I was, the person who I am now. Like, no, it's the same fucking person. I'm the same person. I can't distance myself from versions of myself. I also can't distance myself from the version of myself who was so bought into her career and the startup life that it was unhealthy. And there was this really interesting task. I don't even know how I found it, to be honest. I actually can't remember. But it was about I do know what it was. It was someone who was talking about how they were writing their autobiography, and they had talked about how they like started to structure their life, and I found it so interesting that I did it myself. And they broke down like the versions of themselves over the decades. So they talked about, not necessarily, you know, specifically to decades, but the versions of themselves that they could recall. And they talked about things like, when I was a teenager, like I was this. And they almost like created this past identity and said like, this is the stories I told myself. This is the behaviors I had. This is who I was. And they did that for so many stages of their lives, and they like actually put it down on paper, and it was part of their process of structuring their autobiography. And a build on top of that that they'd mentioned was around like gratitude. So write down a task that maybe you want to try, like a journaling task. If you do this, I mean, who am I to set you tasks? But if you find this interesting, I found it really interesting, let me know if you do it. But essentially just jot down, like when you think back to your life, what are the versions that really stand out? For me, as I said, the party girl, the startup girl, probably like going into the wife era, even though I don't make that a massive part of my personality, it definitely impacts the scripts I tell myself, the behaviours that I do. Mother will probably be one along the route. Podcast era definitely will be one of them. But writing down like those things, and then also writing down like what you're grateful for in them. For myself, this was really like cathartic and helped me, I guess, integrate. Obviously, I haven't done a very good job because I just went who I was, who I am now, but helped me kind of like integrate this storyline that has led me to where I am now, like writing what the benefits of those things were. Like so many benefits of being the party girl. There was amazing things in that time of life, like the fun, the freedom, the friendships, all of that stuff. So name the versions that came before you. Give them a name. I was this. This is how I expressed it. These were my narratives. This was the behavior that I expressed in it. Literally put it down on paper. And this is the idea of cleansing, right? Of shedding, of putting them down on paper so that they become a part of you, but they move to the back. They're not like an active identity. I think that's all, that's like just a really valuable thing to do. And then you can start to restory like who you're becoming. As I said, that book, The Third Perspective, for me was like a really structured, amazing way of doing this. I've also seen people do this using like ChatGPT as a prompt. I've seen them do it with like prompt a day journals, that kind of stuff. But start to restory who you are becoming. So identify the stories that you tell yourself now. Who am I? What chapter am I in? What kind of themes are working in my life? Where am I feeling desire in my life? Where am I feeling like a disconnect in my life? And put that down on paper as well. And then look at your behaviors as well. They're part of your identity. So think about what behaviors really work for me, which ones feel like they're coming from my core, and which ones feel like they're more performative and coming from my shell. So start to build that new story of like who you are. And again, you don't need to hold this heavily. It doesn't need to be like, I've put this on paper and therefore this is who I am. As we said at the beginning, that's not going to be the best outcome. But if you're feeling constant confusion and like you're lost and you're shifting all the time, putting some sort of pen to paper around those ideas will be really helpful. And then something you've heard me say before is action creates clarity. Again, her name's Marie Forleo, I believe. She's like a motivational speaker in the US who I first heard this idea from, that action creates clarity. You can't think yourself into a new identity or a new perspective and a new grounding. You have to act before you feel ready. You can't think yourself into a new identity at all. You have to behave your way into it. Like, you can't just say to yourself, like, okay, I am a sporty person now. I've changed my identity. I am a sporty person. You have to do the sports. That is the part. You have to do the behavior. Or like, I am a kind person. If that's part of your identity that you want to amplify, you have to do the kind things. You can't just tell yourself you're those things. We've all met that person, and there's a lot of them in politics, who say they are one thing and they act another way. That's never going to bring you back to your core self. So we have to start acting before we feel ready and learn who we are from what we do, right? Each action is like a small proof to yourself and to your brain that you are who you say you are. For me, like a big example in the last few years is that I really wanted to be someone who does things. I had this really negative script of myself of, I'm someone who always quits and gives up. And to be honest, a lot of the evidence in my life like completely supported that. So like it made sense, but it's not the identity that I wanted. So I had to start proving to myself through behavior that like I am not someone who quits. And now I'm not someone who quits. Like I'm really not. When I look at the podcast, I've consistently done it for I think 33-ish episodes now. I have proven that I can now bring into my self-identity that I am not someone who quits. So act before you feel ready and use your behavior to guide you in this process. And then maybe this is the last one, maybe there's actually one more that I'm thinking about, but also practice that psychological flexibility that we talked about. Like really push yourself to explore new things and to not become stuck in your ways, and allow yourself to create roots where it makes sense and have more freedom where it doesn't. People who treat the identity as flexible and not fixed, we know that they experience more well-being and less burnout. So try new things, practice that flexibility, try on the hat of like, maybe I'm a person who does this. Try it out, try the behavior. Does it work? Does it not? Maybe I'm a person who does this. Try that behavior. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. But then sit down and reflect on it. I think that will be a way to ensure that you're still expanding and changing, and you know, you're not chasing the perfect version of yourself. You're just becoming, maybe you're even just becoming more of yourself through this whole process. And yes, actually there is a last one, because to talk about identity and to not talk about the importance of identity in relation to connection to other people, I think would be really silly. As I said, our sense of self does not exist in isolation, and especially not if you're a woman, because you will constantly be having these things projected onto you of wife, mother, girlfriend, you know, cool girl, angry feminist, if you're me, you will always have those things projected onto you. So really think about how the relationships in your life also add to your view of identity. Do the people around you solidify those stories to yourself, or do they not? Like, are you actually surrounding yourself with people who, they don't build your self-concept that you want, and they don't build a grounded version of you, and they feel like they're part of your shell rather than part of your core? That's just something to think about, is how does your identity exist in relation to others? I hope I haven't derailed everyone with this. I found this exploration very grounding in that, look, it's completely normal that we are going through these massive shifts at these stages of our life. You are not alone in it. We're all going through it. It's completely fucking normal. It's reflected in the research. Do not freak out. On top of that, it is actually beneficial if you can iterate and have flexibility in your identity. It's not a crisis, it is an evolution. Then we've gone into how you can start to explore that concept of the core and the shell. Hopefully that will help you redefine some of the things that you're feeling right now, or get closer to the things that you're feeling right now, and also how to shed the stuff that just doesn't work for you anymore. And then start behaving in that way and start testing it and trialing it, and keeping in mind you've got an evolving sense of self and evolving identity, and that's a great thing. And also, you are absolutely entitled to and valid to feel a sense of loss as you're going through this, to miss who you were whilst also loving the version of you that you're becoming. That is okay. That duality is completely okay. Name her, write her down, give the gratitude to who she was, and, or he was, if you're a man listening, and use that as fuel, build it into your sense of self. Life is very, very long, hopefully, and we will be evolving. I hope that this episode has been useful. I also hope that it has gone down what you thought it might go down when you voted for this episode topic. If it didn't, then I'm deeply sorry that you were misled. All I can ask is that if you found this useful, I'd be really appreciative if you drop a comment, drop a like, or even better, send it to someone who you also think might find it useful. That is honestly the biggest way that you can help the podcast grow. And what I will be so thankful of is if that any of these episodes hit home and you think they'll hit home with somebody else, I'm so, so grateful if you can share them. So that wraps it up. That wraps it up on identity and how it is ever evolving in the weird years. I hope that you've enjoyed it, and yeah, we'll speak next week. We'll be back next week with more amazing guests. Thanks for listening.